security team than to protect my client. Maximoff tosses my pillow down. So what is this, a promotion or a demotion for you? I tuck in my black comforter. It's a transfer. Everyone on security earns the same amount of money, except you make more if you're a lead of a force. I wipe sweat off my forehead with my bicep, the heat not dying down. Muffy uses the hem of his shirt to rub his own forehead, revealing his cut abs. Damn. I casually avert my eyes. I pop another bubble with my gum. But this little housing situation is a definite demotion. I look up and smile as he uses his middle finger to point at the door. There's the exit if you can't handle it. I can handle anything, Maximoff. I bite my gum into a wider smile. I'm stating a fact. This townhouse is old and small. Where I lived before was brand new in a mansion. The Hales, Cobalts, and Meadows families live on the same street, in a rich gated neighborhood, not far from here. Philadelphia suburbs. One street over in that same neighborhood, they bought 2 8-bedroom mansions just to house the 24/7 bodyguards. Security Force Alpha and Epsilon all currently room there, basically the ones who protect the parents and the underage kids. Omega, those of us who protect the 18 and older children, are the ones spread out. Our movements mimic our clients. We don't choose where we live, we just live wherever our clients do, and bodyguard shuffles happen. Someone quits to start a family or concentrate on their kids, someone is fired for incompetence, someone wants a life change, whatever the case, the 3 security leads will shift many of us once a vacancy appears. That person just happened to be me this time. I never became a part of the cliques of Security Force Alpha, because I hate cliques, and I was too much of a maverick to be accepted by the older regimented bodyguards. Now that I'm a part of Omega, I'll see Alpha less, which is perfectly fine with me. Muffy tucks in the last corner of my comforter. So, when security found out you'd be my bodyguard, no one sent you condolence cards or told you that you'd be better off rocketing to the fucking moon? He's fishing for information on how security perceives him, because Declan obviously told him shit. No one had time to send me cards, I say. But if they did, most would say good luck trying to steer that ship. Sounds about right, he says. Is that it? Wow, he knows nothing. If I came face to face with Declan today, I'd shake his hand and say you're a fucking asshole. But I'd have to do that with 2/3 of the security team. We all have different relationships with our clients. I prefer the mutual kind. No one would pity me. I slide my empty duffel beneath my bed. It's not like when Oscar was transferred to Charlie's detail, we all threw him a funeral. I raise my brows in a wave at Moffy. He smiles a bit and shakes his head a couple times. Charlie. Charlie Cobalt, his 19-year-old cousin and the oldest Cobalt boy, is notoriously difficult to follow around. One day he'll be in Ibiza, the next Paris, then Japan. He's spontaneous, unpredictable, and out of all the kids, his frank tweets and comments go viral the most. Only a second passes and Moffy's lips start to downturn, his cheekbones sharpening. I've heard rumors from security that Moffy and Charlie don't get along. I've even seen them argue before. If he rarely hangs out with Charlie, then I'll rarely see Oscar. That's how this works. Maximoff checks his buzzing texts, but soon after he slips his phone back into his pocket. So, today, I'll have lunch at my place. You can settle in here, whatever you need to do, and I'll go to my office in Center City about 2. I'll text you when I'm in the garage. I need your number. His brows pinch. We've never exchanged numbers? I chew slowly again. We've never needed to, Wolf Scout. When we were younger, I only saw him when I had to tag along my dad's on-call appointments for the holidays the Hales invited us to. Labor Day cookouts, some birthdays. It's not like Moffy and I were friends. He was only 15 when I was 20. I was in college with friends my own age. I tilt my head, watching him stare off into space. I wave my hand at Maximoff. Did I lose you? He moves my hand away, mentally present, and then he reaches out. Pass me your phone, I'll put my number in your contacts. Or you could just hand me yours. No. I roll my eyes at the firm no, but I decide to just comply and give him my cell for now. It's not an argument, I need to win. What about after your work ends? He types his number on my cell and hands it back. Dinner plans are up in the air. I'll let you know if I'm going to a restaurant. Are you in for the night after dinner? Before answering, Maximoff pulls his damp shirt off his head and balls the fabric in a fist. My brows hike at his sculpted body, broad swimmer shoulders, and lean torso that gleams with sweat. Photograph-worthy, a money shot for paparazzi. Certain clients want money shots blocked from cameramen. Some post money shots on Instagram so they're worthless for paparazzi to sell. Others don't care. His rule number 67, don't worry about money shots. It's not important. I eye the curvature of his long arms. Is the gym a constant pit stop because your mom was a certified couch potato? I used to spend my tiny free time at Studio 9 or passed out asleep. Maximoff rubs his damn forehead with his bicep. The pool. Just the pool? Yep. I scratch my throat where my tattooed swords lie. I can count 8 places on your body that say you're full of shit. I casually point at his abs. Maximoff scrutinizes me. You look unimpressed. He's used to people outwardly fawning. I begin to smile. Because mine are better, Wolf Scout. He huffs, then glares and motions to me. Take off your shirt and we'll find out. I pop my gum. I love a dare. I pull my V-neck off my head and then toss my shirt on the mattress. His gaze sweeps the black ink on my chest, ribs and abs, almost everywhere. My fair skin is a mosaic of skulls, crossbones, swords, rough swelling water and sailing ships. Colorful sparrows and swallows intersperse the grayscale pirate imagery. I follow his eyes as they descend, all the way to the hem of my black pants. Normally, I'd think he was checking me out, but Maximoff has more ethical boundaries than a football field stacked on top of a tennis court stacked on top of a hockey rink. I bet he'd drive a sword through his heart before he broke his morality. Mine are better, he retorts. We're gonna need an unbiased judge. Moffy glances at the door. Janie isn't home yet. I said unbiased. Find someone who doesn't know me and then we'll talk. He's aware that's impossible. Then he asks, is my list still in your back pocket? Yeah. You want to take it out and write this down. His list was thorough, but he definitely left out significant details concerning sex. I didn't even see any mention of NDAs on the paper, but he has to have those if he wants to fuck strangers and not have his underwear stolen. I say, I can memorize whatever you have to tell me. I've already memorized his 132 rules in the car, and I briefly skimmed the 8 pages. Steady hand, sharp mind. I graduated top of my class at medical school, which enraged half the faculty. I didn't look the part. I heard, take out your piercings and cover your tattoos daily. And they nearly shit themselves when I got neck and hand tattoos my second year. Still, I graduated in the top 1%. Maximoff doesn't prod me to grab a piece of paper. He barrels ahead. At some point, he says, not tonight because I'm still digesting this new arrangement. Relationship, I correct. And his shoulders instantly lock. It definitely annoys the fuck out of him that we're attached somehow. He steps over my comment. Soon I'll go out to a nightclub and I'll find someone to fuck. It's just about sex. NSA. No strings attached. A one-night stand, and I need you to remember this next part. What? You can't tell me no. My nose flares and my eyes roll in the slowest wave. You can't be serious, his glare says he is. Moffy, Maximoff, he corrects, which makes me shake my head and almost roll my eyes for the 1,000th time. Everyone in his family and security uses his nickname. No one but the media and public sticks solely to calling him Maximoff. I assume he's lumping me in with the tabloids to try and piss me off. He motions to me. For a guy who has such a great memory, you forget to call me by my full name a hell of a lot. Maximoff, I say with an extra flair. And he flips me off with both hands. I barrel ahead with the real issue. All security would tell you no if they sense someone with ill intent wanting to sleep with you. And I'd tell you, be smarter than that. He's a billionaire celebrity. Half the population either wants his money, fame, or dick. Most of the time, all three. And some are willing to cross lines for it. Someone could drug him. I could overhear shit talk that he doesn't hear. The list is endless. He considers my words for barely half a second. You have to trust my instincts like Declan did. My gum is stale in my mouth. I'll trust your instincts until they fail you. How about that? Fine, because they won't fail me. He heads to the door and leaves my room.
5. Maximoff Hill. One hand on the wheel, I drive towards a grocery store. I raise my phone to my lips with the other and speak into a notes app. Laundry detergent, eggs, dish soap.
Londo, egg, soup.
The automated voice reads back.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I glare at my phone. Pharaoh's amusement is palpable in the passenger seat.
Brake.
Damn it. I slam on my brakes before I bulldoze into a white sedan. 2 days of Pharaoh as my bodyguard and I'm already feeling the effects. Scatterbrained, rattled, sexually tensed up. I haven't had sex in 48 hours. I masturbated in the shower this morning, and I tried so goddamn hard not to imagine him. Hot water pelted my squared shoulders. My head dipped forward while warmth doused my brown hair. My left hand was closed into a white-knuckled fist against the tiled wall. My right hand stroking my throbbing cock that stood at hard attention, begging for a release. One fantasy plays on a loop, no matter how much I say off, turn off. Pharaoh enters the shower right behind me. Fog steams the glass doors, layering the stifling heat. His commanding, assertive presence pushes up against my muscular back. Then his strong arm extends around my build, and his large palm encases my white-knuckled hand on the tiled wall. He holds tight. Water cascading over the sharp plains and valleys of his muscles. My gaze travels along his inked skin. His soft lips skim the base of my neck, to my ear, where he whispers in the deepest, most gravelly voice he owns.
Maximoff.
Pharaoh snaps his fingers at my face.
Shit.
I yank myself out of a fantasy, coming to the present where I'm driving, where I'm gripping my phone way too tightly in one hand, where Pharaoh is staring at me like I've just flown to an unknown dimension. How did I even fall into that shower scene again? I was just trying to remind myself to forget it. Forever. Pharaoh opens his mouth, and before he asks where I mentally departed, I beat him to the punch. I was thinking about Janie. What the fuck is wrong with me? Jane, really? I restrain the urge to cringe. She may be my best friend, but she's also my cousin. Swiftly, I add, you know, I'm on my way to see her. At the grocery, that part is true. We do almost everything together. Pharaoh studies me for an even longer moment, not saying anything. I fix the air conditioning. My muscles constricted, body hot. At least I didn't sweat through my gray crew neck. At least I didn't get hard. He extends his arm toward me. My brows knot at him. Pharaoh leaves his arm on the back of my seat.
Do you need a second?
For what? I go absolutely rigid, but my gaze spends half its time on him and half its time on the road. I think he's about to make a jerking motion with his hand. His lips slowly rise, and he scratches his brow where his barbell piercings lie.
You seem distracted, is all he says.
I'm fine. I grip the steering wheel 10 times harder, and I keep licking my lips like I'm about to say something else. I have nothing to offer except, fuck me. He's your bodyguard. Yeah, well, when I give him that title, it's starting to make him more attractive. I didn't think that'd be possible. But when he's not following me around, I picture him with me. My brain refuses to detach my bodyguard for a single moment of Pharaoh-free peace.
Give it.
Pharaoh motions to my hand. My phone?
What? Since you won't let me drive, I can do the bare minimum and type out your grocery list.
I should let go of this task, but I hesitate to pass it off to Pharaoh. I enjoy doing shit myself. You're not my assistant.
I'm the guy trying to ensure you don't run us both off the road. You obviously need 2 hands on the wheel, so...
He waves me to release the phone, and in my silence he adds,
or you can pull over and let me drive.
I drop my phone on his lap.
You really don't want me to drive.
He puts his boot on his seat, elbow to his bent knee, and he cups my phone.
The day when I finally drive you around will just be much more gratifying.
The day, I say dryly. You mean the day that's never happening?
That one?
I spot the roll of his eyes before I point at my phone.
Is it unlocked?
I'm already in your notes.
He fixes the spelling errors made by the app. Janie texted me stuff she needs. I switch lanes. Two paparazzi vans trail me now, so I constantly check my rearview mirror. Her text thread should be the top one. He lets out a long whistle.
100 unread text messages.
I sense his surprise as he says,
"You're actually breaking your moral code."
I glare and then go for the phone. He retracts it out of my reach.
"Thou shalt not ignore thy family."
You think you're so damn smart. I effortlessly weave between two pickup trucks and bypass the paparazzi. Those texts are just from today, Sherlock. I flick off my blinker.
You're serious?
Yep. I'm in 12 group chats with different family members. I have 11 cousins alone. That's not including my siblings and my parents, or my aunts and uncles. We all talk. If I can't answer during the day, I go through my texts at night. He scrolls through Jane's thread.
If someone has an emergency, what do you do?
I'll glance at the texts in case someone's freaking out, but most of the time, they'll call if it's serious. I strangely have an easy time freeing these facts, ones that I generally keep to myself. I trust him. It helps that he's been a part of my world long before he was a bodyguard. It's also the issue, but that's another thing entirely. As quiet descends, he types on my notes app and says,
"Jane is asking for chocolate turtles, pretzels, tampons, and lemonade packets."
He adjusts the air vents and points the ice cold at me. I glance from him to the road. "You cold?" I can adjust the air for him. He types on my notepad app.
"You looked hot."
How the fuck can he tell? I'm not, I refute and crank the air to a warmer temperature. Pharaoh scrolls through his phone too.
"I still have time to call the store. I can get someone to fill a cart with all the items on your list."
It's a safe route, so shoppers won't bombard me in the aisles. Alpha is known to go one step further and shut down the grocery store, giving my parents, aunts, and uncles privacy and secure exits and entrances. "No," I say firmly. "I'd rather just get the groceries myself. It takes me 2 hours, but I don't like the idea of being waited on and taking up someone else's time."
"Okay."
He sounds genuinely okay with that scenario. I was expecting a 2-minute argument. My strained muscles ease a fraction. "Fair warning," I tell him. "Paparazzi will bum rush me when I leave the store. They'll get up close to take shots of my bags." He listens carefully. "I don't care if they can see what I bought, so don't worry about pushing them back. I just need to be able to get out in a reasonable amount of time."
"I'll get you out."
His staunch certainty heats my core. He raises my phone.
"Anything else you need?"
"Ground beef, chips, taco seasoning, everything bagels, oatmeal, protein bars, and shakes. I need condoms and more lube. Fuck." At my abrupt stop, I sense his confusion brewing, but he finishes typing those items. I shouldn't be censoring myself around him. At some point, I'm going to have a one-night stand. He may hear me orgasm through the fucking door or wall. I've also tried not to make sex a taboo subject in my life. With people I trust, I try to speak about it as easily as the weather. My parents raised me to see sex in a positive light. That's continuing, unless I'm a dead, lifeless corpse.
"What else?"
Pharaoh looks over at me. I change my grip on the steering wheel. "At least 3 boxes of condoms and water-based lube," I say, my edged voice more like a serrated knife right now. Ready to butcher him. "Calm down. I'm high-strung. I get that." Pharaoh drops his foot to the car mat, sitting straighter. He types on my phone, the silence thickening. I can't read his reaction. Not while I concentrate on the evening traffic and a van that almost touches my bumper. I've been trying to drive only 15 over the limit, to show him it's not a speeding habit but a choice that I can control, a choice I make. But it's hard not revving to 30 over when paparazzi latch this close. I speed, just to pass a Mustang and switch lanes, putting distance between me and the paparazzi. As I decelerate, Pharaoh drops his arm to the middle console.
Done typing, he says. Silicone-based lube feels better than water-based. I glance at him, just once. I've never tried it. He keeps his hand to his mouth. What does that mean? I start glancing to the road, to him, the road, him, and I realize he's smiling. When I catch his expression, he lets his hand fall, his lips stretched so wide, and he shifts in his seat and hunches forward as he types out something on my phone. What are you doing? He turns his head to me, and bleach white strands of hair slip to his lashes. Writing down my favorite lube for you, Wolf Scout. I flex my abs to stop from hardening. Dear world, I hate you. Worst regards, a human being who's trying not to bust a nut. Cool, I say as he passes me my phone. Yeah, so cool. Let my childhood crush also turned bodyguard pick out my lube for me. That will make not fantasizing about him so much easier. So smart of me. Genius. Maybe I shouldn't have dropped out of Harvard. 6. Maximoff Hale. 6 months ago, Jane Cobalt rushed into my room at midnight, face covered in an avocado mask, brunette hair twisted in a pink towel. Muffy, she whispered. I hadn't fallen asleep yet. At the spike of her breezy voice, I flipped on my lamp fast, and Janie saw the girl nestled beneath my covers, buck naked, both of us. Jane winced.
Désolé, ça n'a pas d'importance.
So sorry, it doesn't matter. She started to leave. I whispered with urgency.
Attends.
Wait. I hurried out of bed and tugged on boxer briefs.
Jane.
I sprinted to the door, and my one-night stand groggily said my name. I assured her, I'll be right back. I left my door ajar so she'd be less inclined to take pictures of my bedroom. Jane waited for me in the middle of the staircase. At the top, Declan played a game on his cell phone. He'd been guarding my room that night. My bodyguard gave me a colossal amount of figurative space, barely acknowledging me.
Jane.
I stopped one stair above hers.
Go back,
she emphasized.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just had a sudden.
With two hands, she motioned to her body and outward. Jane was rarely lost for words. My brows knotted and I shook my head repeatedly. You had a creature come loose through your small intestines? All right, I wasn't used to Janie miming. Her tiny smile pulled at her avocado mask.
And you still question why you're never picked first for charades.
All right, that too. She inhaled.
I had a sudden epiphany.
Epiphany. About what? I stood like a stone statue. She's moving out. My sudden guess stabbed my lungs. We'd been together since birth. Inseparable as kids and teenagers. In Philly, there weren't laundry lists of actors and celebrities to shirk attention from ourselves. We weren't in L.A. or New York. Our families were the only shiny toys in the window, the only animals in the zoo. Growing up in the public eye here, we related to very few people, so we naturally stuck together. As an adult, it always felt like we were supposed to move on somehow, but I never understood why that meant we had to move on from each other. I wanted Janie in my world. And she was the one who said those 3 months we separated at college, I went to Harvard, she went to Princeton, were the darkest, most miserable days of her life. After a quick glance at my cracked door, she murmured,
an epiphany about my future. Midnight life contemplations, you know those.
I did. When we were 16, we used to sneak into the Meadows Girls' treehouse at night and talk for hours about our identities, our role in the world, who we were, inside and out. Our attention drifted as two calico kittens skulked up the stairs. She picked up Walrus and let his brother Carpenter scamper away. Jane owned 5 cats, Walrus, Carpenter, Toodles, Ophelia, and Lady Macbeth. I never minded them or even the strays she sometimes housed. They made Janie happy.
I can't do philanthropy for much longer,
she said after a short pause. That. Too many emotions hit me at once, so I knocked them aside, and a heavy nothingness weighed me down.
Since she was 18, Jane had been the temporary CFO for HMC Philanthropies. I tried to prepare myself for the day she'd leave, but I let the idea wither and die in my brain. She'd be by my side forever. Except forever always ends.
It's almost been 3 years, Muffy.
She tried to kiss Walrus without avocadoing his calico fur. Then he sprung out of her arms.
Charity work is just supposed to be my pit stop. It's what you're good at. It's what you desperately love.
She said the word love from her core.
But me?
You don't have to convince me. I know it's not your thing. I wish it could have been, but I wouldn't selfishly beg her to stay. Because out of loyalty, she would. And I wasn't going to trap my best friend. Jane lowered her voice to another whisper.
We're all incredibly privileged, and the thought of wasting a moment or any opportunity we've been given feels like eternal failure.
No, I snapped, concerned about where this was headed.
It's true.
She tried hard not to scratch her face, but her mask must have itched because she kept crinkling her nose. She tilted her chin up and looked me right in the eye.
I can't sit idly by and be the woman no one hoped I'd be.
My jaw tensed. You put way too much fucking pressure on yourself. All of the girls I was surrounded by did, and it had a lot in part to do with the media placing impossible ideals on them. Before they even hit puberty, they were supposed to be role models, advocates, successful, beautiful, fierce, strong, humble, and sweet, when all I ever wanted for each of them was to be happy.
Let me preface,
Jane said.
My epiphany has nothing to do with math.
Good. Jane loved math as a child, even joined Mathletes as a teenager, and people fantasized about Janie having a career in the field, but she never meant for it to be a lifelong passion. Still, people on Twitter, Tumblr, all social medias, they created an entire life for Jane off a favorite childhood school subject. It was a lot of pressure for a kid. Fear of disappointing your parents, that's one thing. Fear of disappointing fans, the world. That's a massive, indestructible wall that many people I love keep running into. I've even met that wall before. Jane took the largest breath. The crux was coming.
I realized tonight, she said, that I've spent nearly all 4 years of my college experience ambitionless, lackluster. I need drive.
She clenched her fist like she channeled Joan of Arc into her soul.
A challenge.
Her eyes lit with fire.
My parents live by ambition, and my tank is dry, empty, kaput.
You're not ambitionless. You're in Princeton. In anyone else's world, that would be considered a success. For the Cobalt family, attending an Ivy League was just expected.
Online courses,
she corrected.
And I only have 3 semesters left. I'm setting a goal, a challenge. I have to find a career path by the time I graduate. No floundering like a dead fish. I'm born from lions.
There it was. The biggest truth. Her parents had their shit figured out in the womb. Her mom created her own fashion company at 15. Her dad ran a multi-billion dollar paint, magnet, and diamond business called Cobalt Inc. by 24. In Jane's mind, she wasn't even the tortoise lagging behind. She hadn't put herself in the fucking race yet. Ambition. She wanted it. I vowed to help her. And we've been doing random activities together ever since, just to ignite a modicum of inspiration. Flight lessons, roller derby, and most recently, cake decorating. Bells ding as Pharaoh holds a door open to a polished city bakery. I was a centimeter away from grabbing the knob first.
I'm just faster than you,
Pharaoh says, near laughter as my scowl deepens. On land, maybe. And so much more humble, too. I know he only lets me enter the bakery before him because it's empty. Bought out for a couple hours by Jane. A few weeks ago, her bodyguard retired too, and Akara assigned a new face to Jane. 20-year-old Quinn Oliveira is the youngest bodyguard on the team, and he's earning his stripes by starting on Jane's detail. I don't know him that well, just that he's a former pro boxer, Brazilian-American, and his older brother is another bodyguard on SFO. Quinn's inexperience doesn't bother me. Everyone has to start somewhere. But I do find it strange that they're letting Pharaoh train him. Christ, Pharaoh practically threw out my rules on day one.
He's not the ideal bodyguard role model.
Quinn looms by the bakery's sprinkle rack, right near the store window for optimum entrance security. And where there's a Quinn, there has to be a Jane. I leave Pharaoh at the bakery front, attempting my best to glance back only one time, not half a million. Pharaoh rests his knee on a stubby wooden stool and quietly talks to Quinn. My bodyguard motions towards the entrances and exits, probably giving him tips or something. I walk deeper into the bakery, and my smile forms the instant I spot my best friend. Hands perched on her wide hips, Jane surveys the artistic chalkboard menu as though this one decision will determine her whole future. Pale blue cat-eye sunglasses perch on long, frizzy brunette hair. Jane's as unique as her style, mint green pants, frilly Victorian sleeves beneath a zebra print sweater, mismatched sequined heels, and a watermelon-shaped purse. No one can duplicate or clone this girl. She's patented one of a kind, and I'm not letting go of her. Not any time or day or year. I love her too damn much. Approaching fast, I steal her gaze and watch her own smile take shape. In seamless French, I say, "Bonsoir, ma moitié." Good evening, my other half. I kiss both of her freckled cheeks. Her long lashes shade poised, blistering blue eyes.
"It's just you and me, old chap."
Nearly at the same time, her arms wrap around my waist and mine slide around her shoulders. I draw her into a warm hug. My muscles start to loosen, like I'm home. You know Jane Eleanor Cobalt as the oldest Cobalt child out of seven. The 22-year-old pastel-loving, cat-hoarding girl who invites you into her life like a friend. You've seen Instagram videos of her burning French toast, trying on a new pair of pants, and reading passages of old literature. You also pressure her to become a math professor and to advocate for women in STEM. And you pry about who she's dating or not dating, but you're not sure if it's serious between them. I know her as Janie, my best friend, ma moitié. 1 month apart in age, but she's a million light years smarter. A girl who breathes loyalty like it's a third lung, who will sacrifice every day, minute, and second for the people she loves. Fair warning, I'll break both of your kneecaps and stake your head on a pitchfork if you fuck with her. Glad we have that covered. Jane rests her chin on my chest, and she looks up.
Just us. Except for the two very strapping bodyguards, the bakery employees, and your three siblings that'll arrive at seven.
I invited my two sisters and my brother to join us later. Thanks for calling the bakery in advance, I say seriously. No sarcasm. When I asked Jane if my little brother could join, her first response, "I'll buy out the bakery for a couple of hours." The two of us, Jane and me, we don't typically shut down stores for ourselves. We can handle media and public attention. But Jane knew that Xander wouldn't come if people were around. Instead of saying, "just leave him back," she was the first to help include him.
"Avec plaisir,"
she says silkily. "With pleasure." So I'm fluent in two foreign languages for very different reasons. I'm not going into the rabbit hole of the second one, but for the French, Jane and I taught ourselves more than we learned in prep school. We picked it up quickly since her parents are fluent. My arm stays around her shoulders while we face the menu. Sketches of different shaped cakes are scrawled in pink chalk. Boom. My head whips to the storefront. Hordes of young, excitable girls push against the glass door. I'm talking enough bodies to flood the sidewalk and trickle into street parking. I stand up, muscles constricted. Our location got leaked. Already. Jane and I don't draw crowds like we're a band at Coachella unless people post about us. Janie starts scrolling through a Twitter feed.
"It looks like a fan tweeted that they saw the paparazzi outside the bakery."
"Did they post the address?"
"Oui."
"Yes." "Great," I say dryly, and I take my phone out of my pocket. A few cameramen flocked the area when I first parked my car. I don't mention them every time I see one. It's like pointing out the grass, cement, or the damn sky, their scenery, to my world. Always there. Always present. And sometimes fucking up my day.
"Back up,"
Pharaoh shouts through the glass. Girls keep trying to yank open the locked door. Some pound on the windows. For as severe as his voice sounds, Pharaoh looks unconcerned by the growing masses. He grips the handle to keep the door from jerking against the lock. Quinn yells at the fans to leave, too. But my gaze is tethered to Pharaoh. I sweep his relaxed 6'3" build, his supreme composure, all in the face of a high-stress situation. Pharaoh turns slightly, keeping his hand on the door, and with one quick glance, his eyes touch my eyes. Before he reads my expression, I rotate completely. I rub my sharpened jaw. My phone vibrates in my palm. I see the names Luna and Kenny, my two sisters, and I read the incoming texts. Mafi, Xander won't leave the house, frowny face, Luna. I told him nothing bad will happen, but he saw his name trending on Twitter, Kenny, and hashtag Philly Bakery, Luna. I text, it's not that crowded here. Don't lie, Xander. I rapidly text, I'll be by your side when you walk in, I promise. I won't let anyone touch you. No response yet. I look up. Pharaoh is watching me. I follow his precise fingers that touch a small, slender mic attached to his black V-neck collar. The microphone's wire runs up to his earpiece and then down to a radio that's clipped on his waistband. All security wear comms, but if he's touching the mic, it means he's actively talking to other bodyguards right now.
Are they bailing?
Jane asks as she sidles next to me. Probably. If Xander stays at home, it means his anxiety is through the roof. Luna and Kenny will want to keep him company. I try one last thing and text, I'll distract the crowds when you come. I want to add that I'd kill for him. I'd move mountains and rip through stone. I'd do anything to ensure my little brother's safety. So I type, I'll take a bullet for you. I'll do any fucking thing. Just get here. I press send. After a long pause, my phone buzzes. It won't work. It never works. Xander. My muscles bind. I flash the text to Jamie. This will be 2 weeks that he hasn't left the house. My parents try not to hound him about the isolation unless it reaches 1 month. It adds to his anxiety, they say. But staying cooped up for weeks on end isn't goddamn healthy either. Jane frowns.
Next time, we should pick him up first.
I nod in agreement.
7. Pharaoh Keen. Alpha to Pharaoh. A straight male voice blares in my eardrum. I scrape late-night scrambled eggs out of my pan and into a ceramic bowl. In the kitchen of my townhouse, I toss the frying pan into the sink, lagging on replying to Price. The 40-something stern alpha lead keeps acting like I'm still a part of SFA. I'm on SFO, and I don't take orders from anyone. What I will do, listen to a car's orders and decide whether I want to follow them or not. Alpha to Pharaoh, Price snaps. I lean on the counter and eat my eggs at a leisurely but naturally quick speed. The oven clock blinks 11:23 p.m. I've been home for less than 20 minutes. Enough time to piss, shower, and crack a few eggs. 3 weeks into my new role and I'm already used to Maximoff's fast-paced lifestyle. He jam-packs his days and his plans constantly change depending on paparazzi, family in need, and the 100 employees he manages at HMC Philanthropies. Most security on his detail would be whiplashed, but his high-stress, hectic schedule reminds me of doing rounds at the ER. I eat and breathe every second like it's candy. What surprises me the most, he hasn't gone to a single nightclub or bar yet. He was the one who said it'd be happening soon, but he's been stalling. I don't ask why, because I'd rather not pressure him to fuck someone. When he's ready, he'll be ready, and I'll have to keep him safe. It's what I focus on. Alpha to Pharaoh! Alpha to Pharaoh! Price repeats harshly a few more times. I should only be hearing Omega to Pharaoh. I touch my mic. Pharaoh! Let's hear what he has to say. I eat a scoop of eggs, alone in the kitchen since my only roommate is sleeping. Jane's bodyguard, Quinn, hasn't grown accustomed to the strange hours yet. As soon as Jane headed in for the night, he practically passed out upstairs, despite my best effort to suggest grabbing a quick meal first. Bodyguard 101. Eat when you have a free second, because you never know when you'll find another chance. Through my earpiece, Price says, you need to ask Mafia about the annual charity camp away. We've heard rumors that he plans to open the event to the public this year, and the security team needs confirmation. Don't take long. The radio quiets. Opening a controlled private event to the public creates major security risks, ones that I'd never ignore. But Maximoff has the power to do whatever he wants with the charity camp away. Not only as the CEO, but he built the highly praised and promoted December event years ago. Wealthy donors will buy expensive tickets to the 3-day camp retreat with him and several family members. They basically pay to huddle around a campfire with celebrities, and only extremely affable people can afford the tickets. I've overheard many of his phone calls in the car, and he's never mentioned a change in the campaway's format. I click my mic. Pharaoh to Alpha, where'd you hear these rumors? Carrying my bowl, I pass through the archway into my living room. The wooden door beside the brick fireplace connects my townhouse to Maximoff's. SFA traced the word public from his assistant's email, Price tells me. We need more intel from Mafi. Respond with an affirmative. When security hacks emails, it's in favor of the families, yet I see the irony. We protect them, but in doing so, we strip away their privacy. I can't change that fact. Alpha, Omega, and Epsilon have a motto, stay ahead of the media. It's impossible to stop tabloids, but we have to be aware of everything that could potentially hit the press and cause harm. Before I grab the doorknob, I click my mic again. I'll get back to you. The second I open the door to Maximoff's living room, a calico kitten darts past my ankles. I swiftly turn and catch Jane's pet. Walrus claws the hardwood, but I lift the little thing and raise the kitten's face to my face. Naughty, naughty. The kitten paws my nose. I smile and tell the cat, you're not allowed to escape, you little bastard. Walrus meows. Jane, stressed,
do not let the little kittens in security's townhouse. It's not kitten-proof. They'll wedge themselves in nooks and crannies.
I'm not about to lose a kitten. Once I enter the adjoining living room, I release Walrus and he darts beneath the rocking chair. No one's on the first floor. I kick the door shut and voices echo down the narrow staircase. I lean on the brick wall, eat my eggs, and scan the cramped area. The decorated version of my bare place, a pale pink Victorian love seat, frilled pillows, a rocking chair, pastel blankets, glass tea cart, two-person cafe table by the kitchen archway, and at least 20 family photos on the mantel. The ugly granny style screams Jane Cobalt. Their house also has a distinct smell of brewed coffee, tea, floral candles, and cat. Stairs creak and Jane emerges first, dressed in pale blue silk pajama shorts and tank top. She carries a bottle of oil and only notices me when she steps off the last stair.
Pharaoh,
she smiles and gives me a curious once over, as though she's the one who caught me with a bottle of oil. Jane, I greet, eating another scoop of eggs. If she had a guy friend in the house, I'd already know about him. She has no time to respond. Maximoff skips two stairs at a time, coming in hot. He pulls his white shirt off his head, his hair disheveled, body ripped, and his gray drawstring pants hang low on his waist. My lips rise and rise. He hasn't seen me yet, and he's going to flip the fuck out the moment he does. I eat my eggs like popcorn. Jane watches me really keenly, but I have nothing to hide. I'm unapologetically me, every day, all day.
Ready, Janie?
He asks, combing his hair back with a quick hand. Then he looks up and sees me. He solidifies, his jaw tensing and eyes widening. I missed you too, I quip and finish off my eggs, my smile growing as his irritation scrunches his features and daggers his eyes. Maximoff drops onto the first floor.
It's been 2 minutes since I last saw you.
33, I correct and watch Jane plop down on the love seat and unscrew the bottle of sweet almond oil. I have a feeling I know its use. I focus on Mafi. Security wants more information about the campaway. Realization hits him and he nods.
You'll have to wait. I promised Janie a massage and she comes first.
Giving or receiving? I ask. His brows jump and he licks his lips, turning his head slightly. He rubs his sharp jaw. I smile, my body tightening, but I ignore the feeling. The massage, Wolf Scout. Are you giving or receiving it?
Receiving, he says more easily. Jane's trying out massage therapy.
She ties her wavy hair into a low pony.
If you two need to talk about the campway, I can wait.
No, Maximoff shakes his head repeatedly.
I'm focusing on you right now. Your ambition, your goal, remember? Jane nods and reads the ingredients on the back of the oil. Her blue eyes lift to me.
I can give you one after Moffy.
Let's see how this one goes first. I set my empty bowl on the nearby cafe table. Maximoff gestures to the rocking chair. Take a seat. He orders me mostly because he has to sit down, and he hates when I tower above him. I'll stand. I pass between him and the rocking chair to reach the fireplace mantel. And you think I'm the stubborn one? He sits next to Jane, and she kneels on the cushion behind him. I skim his family photos. I never said you had a monopoly on stubbornness. I pick up a framed picture of Maximoff doing a backflip off the Hales yacht. Jane in the corner pointing at him with a pretend surprised face. I flash the photo at him. Whatever you can do, I can do better.
Such fighting words,
Jane says, squirting oil on her palms.
As the third unbiased participant in the room, I volunteer myself to be judge of any competitions.
I think you mean biased participant. I set the photo back. The two of them are together in nearly every picture on the mantle.
I can be unbiased,
Jane says, and she begins to knead Maximoff's tight deltoids. He grips the back of the uncomfortable Victorian couch for support. I watch him while I ask Jane, who's better at boxing? Jane pauses and opens her mouth, but no sound comes out. I help her. F-A-R.
M-O-F-F-Y.
She spells rapidly and exhales a breath like she escaped death by betrayal.
Aunt Lily says the truth will set you free, and I couldn't agree more. I feel so much better.
She focuses on the massage again, using her knuckles on his back. Maximoff smiles at me, like he one-upped me. I don't know why you're so happy. She just proves she's partial to you. Maximoff gives me a look.
You can't, even for a second, admit that maybe, just maybe, I'm better than you at your own sport.
It'd take great effort to tear my gaze off his. Your humility is waning. Your superiority is worsening. I break into a huge smile, but my lips lower as Maximoff bears on his teeth, almost wincing. He glances briefly at Jane and tries to peer at her knuckles that edge towards his spine. His shoulders stay in their usual rigid, locked position. Try to relax, I suggest, nearing the love seat. Or do you need how-to instructions? He glowers.
The only instructions I need are how to make you shut the fuck up.
He trails off and stifles another wince. Jane can't see his expression. You're too close to his spine, I tell Jane, and I reach out to her wrist. Can I?
Please.
I shift her hands to his traps, muscles lateral to his shoulder blades. I close her fingers, oiling my hands, and as soon as she starts kneading his muscles again, she asks,
Better, Moffy?
Yep. His collar is tight, and when he glances at me, then intakes a sharp breath, I realize that my closeness is the cause. I sweep his stringent posture. Maximoff Hale, shirtless, muscles oiled, and being massaged beneath novice hands. He'd feel better beneath mine. He winces.
Fuck, Jane.
She pinched his nerve. She raises her oiled hands.
Sorry.
Jane searches for something.
Merde.
She says shit in French.
Hold on, Moffy. I'm going to pop up the video again.
She nods to me. Then the coffee table where her phone lies.
Pharaoh, would you mind?
I wipe my oiled hands on my black pants and then I grab the phone, cased in a blue zebra print hard shell. How serious are you about being a masseuse? She elbows a piece of hair off her freckled cheek.
If I really enjoy it, then I'll research how to become a professional masseuse and go from there.
She nods to the phone.
The video should be in my recently watched list on YouTube.
I wait to unlock her cell. And what happens when you have a customer who wants a happy ending from the famous Jane Cobalt? Maximoff glances at Jane, exchanging a look like they both discussed the safety risks before. Whenever I scroll through social media for security threats, the ones surrounding Jane Cobalt range from disgusting, plain creepy, to violent. They're both also aware of how some people perceive them. All it takes is a Twitter account. I'd spank the fuck out of Jane Cobalt. I want to see her cry. Tie that bitch up and choke her good. Hashtag Jane Cobalt. Jane Cobalt likes it just like her mom. Ridden rough and hard, put away wet. I'm gonna bang Connor Cobalt's daughter until she can't walk straight. Omega's very protective of Jane without her realizing. In the past 3 weeks, we've intercepted her mail since a sick little shit keeps sending her ball gags. I'll never broadcast this to Jane either, Security wants all of them to live without constant fear. I agree. We read and deal with all the fucked up, demented shit so they don't have to. Jane shrugs and squirts more oil on her hands.
I'd have to screen my customers. It comes with the territory.
Of being famous, I say.
Of being the daughter to Rose and Connor Cobalt,
she clarifies.
Everyone watches me through the lens of my parents.
Maximoff cracks a crick in his neck and mutters, for better and for worse. I understand. Their fame derives from their parents, not from themselves. Rose and Connor Cobalt just happened to be notorious for having sex tapes leaked to the media, specifically BDSM. Therefore, the public assumes their oldest daughter is just like her mother. The security team has an intimate, inside perspective, really the truth, and I know Jane isn't into BDSM. Jane places her palms on Maximoff's back but waits for the video.
YouTube,
she reminds me, and as our eyes meet, she adds,
I'm already lucky that I have the opportunity to take this time to find a passion, and I'm lucky that I can even consider the idea of being a masseuse. If I find what I truly love, I can't let my fame stand in the way.
I glance at Maximoff. His jaw is a razor blade. He's concerned about security risks, too. He's seen those tweets, and I have a feeling that he's just indulging her ambition for the moment and is banking on Jane landing on something safe. I swipe into her phone too easily. Jane. Where's your passcode? I ask, my tone very kind, considering two-thirds of the security team would scold her like she's a kid right now.
I don't have one,
she says.
They're infuriating, and if I lose my phone, I'll wipe the data clean immediately. Plus, I have nothing incriminating. I delete all my texts, and I uploaded most of my photos and videos to Instagram already. There's nothing anyone can steal.
Maximoff smiles, proud of his friend. Her preparation reminds me of something the security team says about Jane, that she acts carefree, but her whole life is outlined and planned to her liking, and she juggles just as much, if not more, than Maximoff Hale. While I find the video, I tell Jane, lightly rub his shoulder blades and you won't hurt him. Maximoff grips the back of the love seat harder and he licks his lips again. I find myself watching him, and as I near the armrest closest to his chest, he's more eye level with my belt. Maximoff stares off into space. Where'd you go, Moffy? I wave my hand at him, but he's lost in his head.
Pharaoh,
Jane's blue eyes twinkle.
How many massages have you given before and why?
Alpha calls her Jane Curiosity Killed the Cat Cobalt. I scroll through her YouTube recently watched feed. Too many, and look up the main purpose of a massage and you have your answer. I discover the video and whistle. How to give an amazing, super fantastic massage. I press play and find a blurry image of two high school girls. No, I shut it off. Let me show you. Maximoff wakes up, glaring at me. No. Welcome back, Space Cadet. He flips me off and repeats harshly, no. Jane shakes out her arms, tired already. You have to use your whole body, I tell her. And to him I say, let me demonstrate so she can copy me. I'd love to give him a massage for more reasons than just to help Jane. Maximoff gestures to my chest. You don't know how to give a massage. And you really missed the part where I just said I've given massages before. I place Jane's phone on the coffee table. I know how to do a lot of things better than average. I'm good with my hands. Great. He's being more headstrong over something I thought he'd forfeit for Jane. I hone in on his stiff posture and the way his Adam's apple bobs as he swallows.
Maybe Pharaoh is right,
Jane says.
Maybe I could use a real live demonstration.
Maybe Pharaoh is full of shit, Moffy replies. Maybe Maximoff is scared of getting a massage from me, I refute. You're wrong. He stands, facing me with as much self-confidence as Atlas bracing the world. He crosses his arms over his bare chest. So what now? He's agreeing to a massage. I use my boot and push the coffee table away from the couch. Then I throw a pillow onto the ground. Lie down, Wolf Scout. Let me change your world.
8. Maximoff Hale. I'm so fucked. I breathe through my nose, suppressing whatever tries to heat my veins and disorient my head. Lust? Irritation? Infatuation? I stare him directly in the eye, unabashed, but I keep thinking, never in my goddamn life have I wanted to accept an order like that one as badly as I do now.
I'm highly aware that I've always been drawn to alpha males, the kind of men who want to top me as much as I want to top them. I get my way almost every time, but just toying with the vulnerability of being with someone just as strong, just as dominant, lights me up to the fucking max. Imagining that person while I stand here right now, I realize that Pharaoh Redford Keene is the penultimate match. He's your bodyguard. Thank you, moral conscience. It's why I refuse to let my gaze slip down to his mouth or his 6'3" build. I don't even let him read my reaction for long. I retie my loose drawstring pants, and then I kneel on the rug before lying on my stomach, a position I rarely find myself in. I prop myself on my elbows and crane my neck over my shoulder, keeping a narrowed eye on Pharaoh. He removes his silver rings, one by one. Christ, his fingers, those fingers are going to be on me. The back of my neck is boiling hot. His brown eyes travel languidly along my back muscles, ones that showcase my die-hard love of swimming and proficiency in the butterfly stroke. After he pockets his rings, Janie hands him a bottle of oil.
A dreadfully bad idea or good one to film this for reference material?
Bad, I say, for no other reason but this one. If it leaks somehow, people will start asking who's my amateur masseuse. Pharaoh rolls his eyes at the word amateur, but he also agrees. Don't record. We both know people would fixate on Pharaoh in this hypothetical video recording because he's A, fully tattooed, B, the kind of attractive that makes you crave a happy ending, and C, his hands would be on me. It'd make him famous. Famous people can't protect famous people, or else I'd be the bodyguard to my own siblings. And once a bodyguard needs a bodyguard to protect themselves, they're worthless to security. Pharaoh would lose his job. Jane lounges on the love seat.
I'll watch attentively then, and take mental notes.
Lady Macbeth, an old black cat, springs onto her lap and collapses, purring. Janie kisses the cat's fur and scratches behind her ears. That damn cat better not distract Jane. I'm not about to repeat this massage.
Cela n'arrivera pas deux fois, I tell her.
It will not happen twice. She strokes Lady Macbeth, her bright blue eyes on me knowingly.
Je regarde. Profite du massage, Muffy.
I'm watching. Enjoy the massage, Muffy. I stay propped on my forearms and glance over my shoulder again. Standing, Pharaoh oils his palms, so damn confident. His smile stretches at the sight of me watching, his bottom lip piercing, too hot. Everything about Pharaoh is lightning cracking the night sky. He lowers. Fuck. Here we go. He rests his knee beside my waist, and the sole of his boot is on my other side, straddling me without touching me. Not yet, at least.
All the way down, Maximoff,
he says in that deep gravel voice,
arms flat by your sides.
My pulse pounds in my neck. I tensely extend my arms by my waist, which forces me to look away from Pharaoh. I'd rather hide my face, so I put my forehead on the decorative pillow, concealed but also staring at nothing. Don't kill me, I snap. He leans forward, his lips near my ear.
Hurting you is the antithesis of my job description.
Right.
Trust me, he breathes. Relax.
The silky part of his voice soothes me from head to toe, like stepping into a steaming sauna.
Fuck. Me.
My normally bound shoulders want to unlock, and I force my arms to stay still and not bring them to the pillow. My whole back is exposed, and only the gray fabric of my drawstring pants lies between Pharaoh and my bare ass. I'm not wearing any boxer briefs. He can probably tell. I shut my eyes, breathing stronger, the anticipation killing me. And then his warmed, oiled hands start at my tailbone. Holy shit. Using the weight of his body to dig deep, he runs his thumbs and palms up the length of my back, reaching the base of my neck and kneading circles around my broad shoulders. A sharp breath catches in the pit of my throat. Holy shit, holy shit. His fingers and hands create hypnotic movements up and down my back, shoulders, and even my biceps and forearms. Every time he anchors his weight to knead and rub my body, I imagine his pelvis near my ass. I grit down, tighten my eyes.